on 1116 SEN. Welcome to the Coach's Box. For the all-new Nissan NV300 Navara. Here now. Test drive at your Nissan dealer today. And Odyssey Financial. Achieve the future you deserve.
North Melbourne and Essendon are under the Friday night lights tonight. Can the Roos really contend? And what can the Bombers get out of the season after better performances from both sides last week?
We put ourselves back on an even keel in terms of the win-loss, but we've done that a number of times this year. So the most important thing for us is to replicate tonight's effort.
I think what last week did is it gave those younger players a chance to have a look at the sort of football club they want to be part of. And so this is our chance to define the way Essendon wants to play and be seen. And I thought they did that today, and they should be very proud of themselves by the way they did that.
Of course, the state of the game has been the hottest topic in football. We'll get a coach's view on it all, as well as all the other hot topics of the week.
I can understand why it's not a good look and it's not a good thing for the game. I guess the game has given me the feedback that I need to change the way that I go about doing that.
I was very disappointed in the way that it ended up looking. I agree it's not a great look for the game. You know, I didn't mean to be malicious in the tackle.
My gut feel is when a quarter is stretched out to 33, 34 minutes, it feels like it's gone too long.
It just takes away that instinctive part of the game, which is to tackle. Like, what are they trying to do to the game? And send the messages about concussion, but it just feels like we're trying to control just too much.
We still have yet to sort out a correct way to be able to spread the game out a little more than it is.
And the coach providing those views tonight has an interesting challenge ahead with his team. It's the Cats, and it's Chris Scott.
Overall, it was a poor performance, and we're not going to run away from it. We had way too many players that were down. Some of the key indicators were relatively close, but I think that just reflects the lack of quality in our ball use and our inability to defend. We defended tonight as poorly as I can remember.
Welcome everyone, it's the Coach's Box for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara here now. Test drive at your Nissan dealer today and Odyssey Financial, achieve the future you deserve. Big show coming up, of course, Dermot Brereton, Rowan Connolly, Cameron Mooney, all part of our panel on a Friday night. They're about to join us, and our special guest, as we said, is the coach of the Cats, and that is Chris Scott. It's always a bit of a love-in moons when we have Chris here.
Welcome to you. Just a Geelong night right now, isn't it?
It is fantastic right now, but Derm's been down chatting to James Hurd, so it'll be interesting to get first-hand, and we'll play that interview for you coming up very soon. But he's just wandering across the Etihad Turf as we speak in his suit, doing a few selfies on the way and signing a few autographs, as is the norm.
As he does.
What about tonight's game from your perspective? Essendon, obviously, were much better last week, but taking on North compared to taking on Melbourne are two different challenges.
Yeah, they were fantastic last week. In saying that, Melbourne were just so poor, so disappointed with what they came up with. But look, I think North Melbourne last week against the Cats were fantastic. That second quarter when they completely put the foot down and blew them out of the water a bit. And I mentioned before with the boys back at Footy Fix, I love the fact that Brad made some big decisions. It was courage decisions, and hopefully from a North Melbourne point of view, I mean, their inconsistencies have been there for everyone to see over the years. Maybe that'll be the thing that might just pull everyone in the line and go, you know what, we need to do something. Because they've got a great run home, Hutto.
Yep.
Great run home to make sure that they play finals footy this year. I still look at their ranking in their defence, 13th. That is a horrible, horrible spot to be at. But over the next 5 weeks, they can really bring that down to make sure that they can challenge come finals time.
Well, the man who coached against them last week, so probably thinks they are a half-reasonable team, is Chris Scott. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Hutto.
Thanks for being with us again in the Coach's Box on a Friday night. So let's start, before we get into the other issues of the week, with this game. And firsthand, as we said, you've just coached against North. And obviously, Brad being away for the month, I mean, I'm sure you've chatted to him about it. He would have got an interesting and different perspective on his club, I suppose, and his team, having to watch on a month from the outside.
Yeah, I think it was challenging, especially when they had... Well, it would have been easier when they were playing well, and it would have been a real challenge when they had a few poor performances. And I guess the competition had a little bit of practice with it last year with Alistair Clarkson,
yeah.
And they had a really good run and won every game. So you, you, you look at that experience and say, well, look, it can operate really well. But when you get a few more challenges, I imagine the difficulty would be assessing when to get involved from afar and when to just delegate and empower the people who are on the ground. Because even though you get a better perspective sometimes taking a step back and looking at the big picture, unless you really know exactly what's going on a day-to-day basis, it can be very dangerous to get too involved and change the view of the people who are seeing first.
You think he had the phone on the couch wanting to send a few text messages?
He did. But I think he, and I don't know this for a fact, but my read of it is that the longer it went on, the less he tried to do in the moment and more tried to help provide a little bit of direction with the big picture.
How do you reckon you would cope without having to sit on the sidelines for a month?
Struggle, which is a fair indication of where his back was at. I think if it weren't for the risk of permanent damage, then I think he'd be toughing it out. But it just got to the stage where it was too great a risk long term and was almost physically impossible anyway. So in terms of how I'd cope, it would be a challenge, but it's also a test for your systems as well. You know, the football's moved a long way past having one person who completely drives the ship. You spend a lot of your time as a coach trying to develop people so that if you aren't there or if you need to delegate to others, that at least as good a job, but sometimes a better job, can be done.
You're seeing a lot of what's happening nowadays, I guess, is from a coaching point of view, a senior coach point of view, you'd love to set everything up at the start of the week. This is what we're going to do, and new assistants, you run the training. And from a senior coach, you'd love to be just walking around for the rest of the week, just getting your relationships right with your players and finding out what they're going and how they're doing and all those types of things.
Yeah, and when things are going well, that's very easy to do.
Yeah.
when you have a few hiccups, the real challenge, at least in my experience in my short time as a head coach, is to just back people when things aren't quite going as well. A direction and good leadership is always important, but sometimes the best thing to do is take a step back and trust.
Essendon and North Melbourne both face some really interesting challenges. Moons as well on a list situation. The Bombers, obviously, a vastly different situation to North. North, we had Brad in here, I think, the week either before or after you earlier in the year, and he was at pains to say that, yes, while they went for Higgins and for Waite, and Nahas before that, so they're looking at the now, but also they still kept all their picks and went about it in that way. But it does externally put, when they've had the season they've had, it starts to put pressure on, doesn't it? It's saying that North are in that sweet spot now, the pressure's on, you've got to be performing, and yet they've had a really up and down year, which must have been extremely difficult for their whole coaching staff and for the players to accept and deal with.
Yeah, I think the pressure builds a little bit externally, but the really strong clubs can... they know what they're doing a lot better than the people on the outside, so they've got to trust in that.
Yep.
And two, stay the course. I mean, if the inconsistency tag is one that intrigues me a little bit, because bar the teams who have been really good or really bad, everyone else has been inconsistent. You have your good games, you have your bad games.
But North does seem to be extreme from that. To lose by 55 points to Gold Coast, to get smashed by... Yeah, I mean, I know we were working on something for Fox, which we'll play tonight. The graph of ups and downs for North Melbourne over, I think, a three-year period in how much they've won and lost games by, it is extraordinary, which must be, as I said... Even your point granted, extremely frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, you want to play your best every single week. And, you know, they were good enough to finish inside the top four at the end of last season. Mm. So, you know, that's obviously a very good year when you put yourself in the position where you can contend.
Is that one of the hard things, though? I mean, we've seen the history of clubs making top four, whether it be top four on the ladder or top four after the finals, and topping up or doing things like that. And misjudging their list. Is it how... I mean, it just must be an eternal problem in footy to really know where you're at.
Yeah, over time, that's been a really big problem. One of the greatest mistakes you can make as a footy club is overrate your list and give up your development and your future for a short-term fix. What's happened in recent times with free agency and increased player movement is there's a greater possibility to do both. So very few clubs these days, Hawthorn are probably a reasonable example, who have brought in experienced players, but there's a big difference when you bring in experienced players and have to give up a lot for them, especially in terms of picks, but in terms of TPP space as well. When you bring in players who cost you nothing in terms of draft picks or delisted free agents, but then keep your early picks, in my view, unless you're really compromising your salary cap, then there is the potential to do both. But you're right, if you go back 5 or 6 years, if you were to give up your first and second pick year after year, and then it doesn't work, that's a horrible mistake to make.
Oh, you just put yourself in a 10-year hole then, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and we've seen some do. I mean, Hawthorn, not a bad case study. If you go through and have a look at the really effective recycle, if you like, players on their list, almost all of them were trades. So they gave up very good picks for Burgoyne, Hale, Gibson, Gunston.
That's the
Blake.
Voice of Dermot Burton, yeah. Who's also with us here on the Coach's Box on a Friday night.
Can't you see me sitting here next
to you? I can, but our listeners haven't heard from you yet.
They're money ball picks, though. And getting back to what Hutto says, is that's an identification of the list fairly accurately. We need a piece of the jigsaw puzzle to fit into this part of our ground, and we reckon we've just about got the reload to go a premiership. So when you take it to tonight's combatant, North Melbourne, were they close enough to say, we've gone for these blokes who came to us free agency, fair enough, but they still have to fork out a relatively good wage for them. Is that the piece of the puzzle they would have identified and sought should they have not even been on the free agency radar?
Yeah, I think the big unknown and the one that we make some assumptions around is the pay packet. So if it doesn't work and you pay overs for those free agents, that can be a huge risk. I'd be surprised if any of the clubs, for that matter, that brought in free agents who weren't your absolute elite.
Yeah.
And who have been the elite free agents over the last couple of years? Buddy Franklin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Brendan Goddard before that, who would have... And, I mean, we know with Buddy and we suspect with Goddard that was absolute top dollar.
You guys were looking at, as were Hawthorn, obviously, Frawley as well. Yep.
Yes, but he would be significantly below Goddard and Franklin. Mm-hmm. I can't think of another example of a free agent that would have been paid very good money. Mm. But that's only my suspicion.
But still, having said that, when you're balancing the books, if you've got three new free agents coming over 2 years and they're each on 400, that's 1.2 of your 10 plus or 11 roughly.
Are you
million.
Critical of North End, Dern? Do you think they misjudged their list?
No,
or not?
I... It's hard to. I think they would have understood, I believe, that there was still a mini gap between them and the absolute top.
Yeah.
And whether they rated these free agents, we're going to bridge that gap and give them a shot at it. To me, I think those players were wonderful players to bring in and capitalise on a team that was already bridging the gap naturally within their own ranks.
It was good to see Taylor Garner come in last week. I'm sure it wasn't good for you to see it, but from a North point of view it was, and Turner came back into the team. We identified, I think, a couple of weeks ago about 10 players that they'd picked in the top 30 in the last 3 years that weren't playing for one reason or another. Mm. So for them, you need to have those guys coming through, don't you, and be out there and playing.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not here to defend North Melbourne. Obviously, I'm probably speaking more from my experience at Geelong. One of the other risks that you do run when you bring in experienced players from other clubs, you tend to play them in your AFL team most week. Now, if they're taking the spot of your developing players, that can be a problem as well. So these things, I'd be staggered if there were any AFL club that didn't put an enormous amount of time and effort into getting these picks right. And a big part of it is, yes, where are we? But the most important part, in my view, is what if it goes wrong? So if this completely fails, is it going to compromise us long term? And I don't know of any club that would accept that risk.
Since we last spoke to you,
maybe Sydney.
Rich Stanley has come onto the radar and he's back out again, I know, with injury. But gee, he was a wonderful, wonderful find. And that talent ID recognition of, hey, we need him as a ruckman. Very few teams play him as a ruckman. Well, very few. St Kilda never played him as a ruckman. That's talent IDing at its highest. I mean, you must be pretty proud of that choice, even though, notwithstanding the fact he's out injured at the moment.
Yeah, we feel a little unfortunate, I guess, in that Rhys Stanley's out for the season with an injury that's impossible to avoid. Mitch Clark was a calculated risk, and we knew that was always going to be a long-term play for us, and there was the potential that it wouldn't work at all, but brought in two 200-centimetre guys that we were really confident could play forward and ruck. Really specific with Reece in terms of him playing in the ruck for us, and that's hard as well when you're bringing guys to fill a gap and they're both unavailable for the better part of the year.
Just when you went into, and I was always a rap for Reece Stanley as a talent, when you went into saying, right, we identify this, do you take into account what are the most back-to-back games that Rhys Stanley had played
he is one that would surprise you. Last year, we think of him a little bit. I think he's got the reputation of being a little injury prone. Mm. He's not your most resilient trainer, but he played a lot of footy. Almost didn't miss a game year before. Sean Higgins is the other one that has that badge of being a little bit inconsistent. He's been remarkably consistent in terms of playing. Had a few injuries that have kept him out across the course of his career.
And probably played with their injuries hampered him as well, I think.
And maybe that's where the reputation comes. You're looking at guys who aren't quite at their best. Mitch Clark is an example this year. He's played at less than his physical peak, and you almost discount those games because you want players to be in when they're performing at their best.
All right. After we take our first break, we'll talk about the rules and those issues game-wise. But Rowan Connolly's joined us. A little bit slower to get here. I know the traffic is shocking out there, Rowan.
Well, evening, everyone. I could make up a dog ate my homework excuse, but the actual truth is...
ate the dog.
No, I... Nice one. I had a bit of a nana nap, and I slept through my alarm.
Do we really need to hear this?
Probably not. Anyway, many apologies. It's been a fascinating discussion on my radio on the way in, whilst I crawled through the Monash.
Just before we... I just wanted to... Hurdy, you've been down talking to Hurdy. Mm. He obviously had the bike crash. Chris, I think... You were in Adelaide during the week for the memorial service for Phil Walsh. I mean, it's been an extraordinary... way lesser scale, your brother's back injury. It's been an extraordinary year for coaches, hasn't it, really?
Yeah, it's been a strange time. It's been, without wanting to get too sentimental or emotional about it, it's been an interesting time for a bit of reflection.
Mm.
I think of all the issues surrounding the tragedy with Phil... from a selfish point of view, I think it reinforces the need for balance in your life and a bit of a reminder of what's important.
Well, do you reckon it's something that could actually make the entire footy world sort of sit back a bit and go, we dress football up as a be-all and end-all, but, it isn't, is it?
No, and we all, especially coaches, we're the ones that lead it, I think.
Mm. But the media's not bad either. Every time you guys lose two games in a row, we've got you on the chopping block. And
to an extent, I mean, that I think Mick Malthouse got a bit of heat early in the year when he started talking about the effect it was having on his family. Mm. I think most people take the view, well, Mick, you're pretty well compensated, and it's not a bad life. And I subscribe to that theory on one level. But you
haven't really faced that pressure yet, though, have you?
No, but it's a different sort of pressure. Dealing with expectation has been a challenge at times. I don't pretend to say that it's anything like the pressure of your job being at stake.
Rowan said, yet?
Yet. Yeah. Oh, well, I know it will come. I'm as prepared as an expert.
Well, it will come, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In the modern era, Paul Roos has avoided the guillotine a couple of times. I can't think of even the greats, Mick amongst them.
Well, probably the best you can do now is sort of say, I'm giving it away at the end of the year. Like Kevin Sheedy is probably the most recent example. And yet even he, despite the fact that his contract ended and they said, OK, we're going to look elsewhere, there was still a perception he got the chop. It's pretty hard to be a coach and not end up having been seen to have got the chop.
On a practical sense, though, does that, the Phil Walsh situation, does that actually make you look at your work-life balance and the club and all that sort of stuff? And your family's only young, obviously, but... Still.
Yeah, it does. More so, I've had this view for a long time, but it probably crystallises it a little more that players need balance in their lives as well. And I think the Players Association have put this squarely on the agenda. And it's a real concern to me when you hear from players that I really respect, that are the furthest thing from whingers you can imagine, talk about their love for the game waning a little bit. When Joe Watson says, and I know his situation's a little bit different, but I think I heard Drew Petrie say,
he wrote a column about it.
Yeah, sometimes the love of the game isn't quite there. It causes me to reflect as a coach on what I loved about playing. And unfortunately, if you surveyed the players, and even if you asked me, what was the best time you had as a player? It was when we won most weeks and when we won premierships.
Yeah.
But that's unsustainable across the course of a career, irrespective of how good your club is. There has to be something in the game that drives you more than just winning week to week.
So was there stuff that you got pleasure out of on the basis you're talking about at Brisbane that you had that players now, 10 years later, don't have?
I haven't got the perfect answer to that. In my experience, and maybe I was a little different to some, early on in my career, I love nothing better than working really hard, having a good win, having a couple of beers with the boys after the game. Midway through my career, I had some injury challenges and I just decided to be straight down the line. I think I lost balance towards the end of my career as a player and didn't enjoy it as much. Now, maybe that was because we weren't as good a team and I was injured half the time.
You wouldn't have been alone, though.
No, I think that is, unfortunately, the...
That's the case.
That's everyone at the end of their career.
Well...
So we're not everyone, but
not
most.
Midway. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say the end of the career, but I reckon when... Well, I'm not hearing from guys who are in their last year. I'm hearing this from guys who have still got four or five good years of footy left in them. And they're the ones that should be leading the charge. I think it's not so much where we are now, it's where we've got the potential to go.
One of the great problems with that, though, is that when guys start thinking in those terms and start seeing football as a workplace, I worry that they lose their passion for the game and their passion for the clubs they're involved with.
It's natural that will happen to some degree once it becomes a workplace and they become professional athletes.
But to an extent, but I still don't think players are driven by money. And yet the common retort seems to be, well, you're well compensated, so suck it up.
Yeah.
I don't think you would accept that in your industry. The best operators are the ones that love it and the ones that are passionate about it, not that say, I'm getting out of bed this morning because I need this 10 grand.
Try working for a newspaper, you're not well compensated and you still have to suck it up.
Stop whinging, suck it up, Brian. 22 past 6, we'll take a break. This is the Coach's Box for the all-new Nissan MP300 Navara. Here now, test drive your Nissan dealer today. And Odyssey Financial, achieve the future you deserve.
Get the coaches in at the end of the year and say what would work, guys, and what wouldn't work. What are the problems with these? What are the pitfalls? How long would it take to correct if we brought X, Y, or Z in? And have a rational discussion involving the coaches, not telling them what we've done, asking them what to do.
Everyone looking about it is topical, and our view is, I think if you're going to adjudicate around the ball strongly, then you don't get secondaries. I think that's really pertinent to the debate.
If it became an issue, the game would need to look at the numbers.
They'd play in zones?
Yeah, potentially, to try and dilute a bit of that.
There is a rule, deliberate out of bounds, and we've probably got to get a little bit stricter in its interpretation. But I think if we get consistency in that, it'll certainly take away, you know, a number of boundary throw-ins that's seeing at the moment.
Where to start on this? 27 minutes past six. No changes for either side for tonight's game between North Melbourne and Essendon. And the Subway subs have just disappeared on the screen. Sam Gibson was one. I think Kyle Langford was the other. Just checking. Yes, they're the Subway subs for tonight. Chris Scott is our guest in the coach's box for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara and Odyssey Financial. We all gave our views on this topic last week, actually. I think we discussed it on the back of your article, Derm, about the number of stoppages, and then we got Friday night's game, which certainly didn't make the discussion go away. So just before we talk about remedies, I'll start with Chris Scott, our guest. Do you think the game needs a remedy to fix it, Chris, or are you happy enough with what's going on?
No, I don't think we ever should be...
We'll try again.
Excuse me. Inexperience. I don't think we ever should be completely happy or content with where the game's at. So I'll say that at the outset. But I also think we've got to be careful not to make a change without getting the opinions of the people that count. And I heard the grab from David King talking about getting the coaches in a room. Fortunately, that happens now. So I think the AFL are much more consultative than they maybe have been in the past. The idea of zones, I agree with you, Rowan. At first glance, it kind of seems a little bit extreme. Mm. But it was put to me during the week that it wasn't that long ago in the scheme of things that the centre square was brought in.
Yeah. Correct.
No one thinks twice.
Well, the diamond first. And yeah. Look, I'm... Well, Derm's my age. We're old enough to remember that.
Just remember the flick of the diamond to the square.
But when the diamond came in 73, now that was an antidote to exactly the same problem, congestion around the ball.
Which was made by John Kennedy Sr.
Correct, and it won Hawthorn a flag in 71. But I don't recall as a kid the amount of hue and cry about that change, as we're getting now 45 years later, when we're supposed to be more sort of... I don't know, relaxed about change.
Yeah, well, we didn't have the Twitter media, back then.
Yeah, no, the media wasn't.
That's true. Well, one of the things, Chris, that's annoyed me about this, and look, I'm happy to say I'm a real conservative about rule changes, but this is one I've come around on because I think the defensive mechanisms have got too effective and I don't see how we're going to overcome the press and the numbers around the ball. But when you say zones, people freak out and they go, netball, you know, too big a change, I'm giving footy away. And then you come back, and I've found this twice this week with pieces I've written, including today's thing with Rodney Ead. As soon as you say hang on, have you actually read it? Do you realise we're just talking about it for stoppage? Now we were
starting points.
Starting point. So if you take the average time of a stoppage, now this is open to debate, but let's say 6 seconds, okay, for a stoppage. Even at the rate we've got now, 74 per game, that's, okay, 500 seconds of a game would be consumed by the actual zone regulations. It's not that much in a 120-minute game. And if you remove 12 players from the equation, three pairs and either 50, you're getting rid of, immediately, 12 players from around that crush. Now, that has to make a significant difference. And I think it's worth at least trialling in the NAB Challenge.
Well, just before we talk about other solutions, I think one of the problems is how do we trial these things? Because the NAB Challenge is important to clubs. You only have a limited amount of time and often the squads are bigger. There's all sorts of things that are different. So I think whatever we, as in the game, come up with, we have to also come up with how we're going to effectively trial these things, and whether it's around where you try a few things in one game, and this is not a NAB Cup game, but you know, one game gets to trial one thing, one another, and maybe even use VFL teams to build a body of evidence quickly and then use some of that to implement decisions. I'm not sure, but
just to go back on Rowan's point there, just say the ball is in the back half, defensive 50. That means you can only have three guys up here. You're still going to have 30-odd players around the ball anyway.
Yeah, now, again, and I'm happy to say this, I haven't sort of drilled down as far as the nitty-gritty of every detail of how it would work. I just think the principle is worth investigating. And the message I'm getting, Chris, and this is one for you to come in, I've spoken now to probably half a dozen current or former coaches about this in the last week, and they all say, well, two things. One, they don't think the interchange reduction on its own will make enough of a difference. And two, that if we don't do something, the current trends, and everyone keeps saying, let football evolve, look how Geelong turned it around with attack and then the press and then da-da-da-da. But the defence has got too good. The forward press is too effective. There's too many defensive actions now for attack to be able to trump them with any effectiveness.
I have a slightly different view.
Yep.
I actually think that the attack is better than it was a few years ago. I think that the modern-day press, as we know it, is less effective now than it was a few years ago. I think sides playing safe with the ball and playing slower and more congested football is much more prevalent. So the part, in my view, that we need to encourage, the part pre-my Geelong days as a coach at Fremantle, I love watching Geelong transition from defensive 50. Defensive 50 stoppages were exhilarating. No one attacks from defensive 50 anymore. The sole goal for virtually every team, unless the opposition just open up, is to get the ball out wide for territory, get a restart where you can build a bit of attack from there. So,
and why is that? Why is that happening?
It's just too risky. It's too risky to attack from deep in your defence.
We get opened up.
Defensive mechanisms now are so much better.
Everyone said. There were teams previously, I think, that for different reasons were a little bit easier to get through. But the flow of information around the competition is too good now. And most sides prioritise defence. This is why the idea of making the players more fatigued, opening the game up so forwards stay at home, is a little flawed in my view. Because most teams, and in my view most good coaches, will say, if you're fatigued, let's stop them.
Yep.
And let's slow the game down, let's save our legs a little bit, and then open up the attack later
and
in the game.
Force the stoppage, which at least gives you a little breather. Yeah. That's what one coach said to me yesterday. He said, if everyone's rooted, what makes them think they're going to go and stand near the goals? They're going to set up behind the ball.
They go back. You're exactly right. Look, I think an advance was made early in the year with the holding the ball interpretation. I think that helped a lot. Compared to last year, players aren't taking on the tackle as much and just conceding that they can draw a ball up. But I think the competition, at least in my time, has never been so receptive to having the conversation. I think the adversarial nature of the debate has gone out of it. And most of the coaches that I've spoken to are pretty open to the debate. I suspect it was a vocal minority previously that wanted to, and they tend to get a bit of exposure, those people, that want to see all the problems in these proposals before we work through why they might actually work.
Would the coaches be willing to forego something that is a strength element within their team, within their coaching manipulations of a game? Would they be willing to let that go in the knowledge that 17 other teams have to subscribe to the same?
Not if you had a huge advantage over the rest of the competition. I think that would be tough to give up, but I can't think of an example where that would be true. I think it would help some teams hurt others marginally.
The better teams exploit their skill advantage?
Maybe.
Well, isn't maybe. That what you but want?
Yeah. If you're a better team.
I mean, yeah. I think well, that's the idea of the sport. Yeah. The best teams win.
I think
the because it's easy to make average teams capable
in
defence than it is to make average teams capable of attack.
There's good things in that, though. I mean, Desmond, you used the line last week, let's not confuse a good contest with a good spectacle. I think that was a good, an intelligent thing to say about the debate. But I think the downside is that you could have more one-sided games if we open it up. But I'm of the view that that's worth doing because some of the scraps you get, just even though it's close, I know I'm probably the wrong person because I see and commentate a lot of footy, but you get through three and a half quarters just for a good ending.
Almost like a body of a
like
human.
If you
actually have open surgery, you never know how it's going to turn out. If you make rule changes, and we might get to that.
Jeez, I'm not going to your hospital.
Yeah, but if you make rule changes to our sport, i.e. the zones, might work in the end. Might.
Yeah.
As opposed to some kind of massaging, I would be more inclined
to... Try that first.
Less of that. That to me, that's an open operation. Something.
Yeah, you want to do the massage first.
The massaging first. So blow the whistle.
So what's the massage?
There should never be any man tackled who's allowed to do a 360-degree rotation before he dishes the ball off. I reckon the whistle should be blown quicker, snapped shut, so the clearance is it's non-existent but in that regard.
We've done that.
No, we haven't. Well, you know what? We slip away from it. And Scotty, put their honesty hat on. Do you teach your boys in the heat of the pack to let the ball to the outside when they're tackled?
It depends where it is on the ground. But no, preferably not. Like everyone coaches the same thing in that respect. You're better off being a little defensive and keeping the ball in rather than, especially, in your defensive 50, spill to the outside.
So if you blow the whistle... The ball is golden, and people say, "Oh, you won't be encouraged to win it." You're always encouraged to win it because you can't kick the thing through the goals unless you have hands on it.
But you are
the whistle should be.
You are supporting tackling, then, though, aren't you?
No problem with that. That's a great part of our game. Mm.
The other catch 22 here,
reward
Chris,
it.
Is that the coaches have to be pivotal in driving this, and yet they're almost at odds with the you're talking about the greater good. And as a guy said to me yesterday, he said, "Well, between October and February, we're all about the greater good. But once the season starts, the onus is on us to win."
Which is why the coaches should be involved in the discussion and then trust the decision
in the summer.
Makers. Yeah, well, but trust the decision makers. The bottom line is we're talking about some rule changes at the margin might help some and hurt others. The bottom line is the rules are going to be the same for everyone.
Yeah.
The coaches' views are a little overplayed in this. I reckon more so than what the rule changes are, the coaches and the footy clubs in general want to know what they are in detail and they want enough notice so they can adapt.
Yeah,
beyond that,
help us make the right decisions with your information, but then once that's done, then you just want to know.
What about
a really smart question is, if we did this, what would you do?
Yep.
And that's a hard question to answer on the spur of the moment sometimes. So if you give the coaches and the footy clubs enough time to talk it over, I'm sure that the AFL would get some pretty good feedback.
The other major one that's been suggested is the boundary line, touched over the boundary line, that sort of thing. And I heard a different version yesterday, which I didn't mind, which was boundary umpires, there's a few extra balls around the boundary line, so there's no delays at boundary umpires. So the boundary umpire just grabs it, throws it straight in, which would be a small thing that would speed things up. So if the ruckman don't get there, they don't get there. But touched off... The last person touching it in the mid, King's been pushing that in the mid zone. What do we think about that?
It might be the way to go. I think we should sort of get to that in the end if we can't clean, because that's a rule change. I don't mind a rule interpretation being massaged into a different area at the moment. First thing is just make the interpretations different, see if we can get a different outcome. Then, if need be, go to rule changes.
The only thing that worries me about that is the guy who pulls off a fantastic smother and gets penalised for it.
Well, that's the thing. There's two ways of doing that. There can be, if you kick or handball and it goes over, it's out of bounds.
Yeah.
And if it's rushed
just
over
in,
or
in
off the pack.
Thing.
But the problem is, I'm not... If you did that, then clubs would still probably kick down the line, kick a metre and a half inside the line, knowing it's going to come off hands and go over the line and out of bounds.
Or try, you know, hit the ball onto an opponent and have it come off.
Well, you've got that option now.
Yeah, to use Derm's language, to massage it would be to have a very, very strict interpretation of deliberate out of bounds, as Damien Hardwick said in the grab a little bit earlier. So, as it stands at the moment, in the boundary throw, and if the ruckman hits it out on the full, it's deliberate.
Yeah. Mm.
So if a backman, and we're talking between the arcs, so it's a bit harsh inside forward 50 or D50, but if a defender hits the ball over the line, maybe that's deliberate.
Yeah.
Maybe if you don't do everything you possibly can to keep the ball in, maybe that's deliberate. I think that's probably the first step. But to all these points, I'm starting to come to the view that not only should the AFL make a bold decision, but they should trial these things in season on the basis that the rules are the same for everyone. If everyone has enough time to work through what they are, have their say, adapt their game style or their personnel as required, let's have a look at over the course of the season. And in the context of the game and where we want it to be in 20 years, let's say it's an unmitigated disaster and it just doesn't work and the supporters hate it. How much have we really lost? This fiddling around at the edges through the NAB Cup doesn't prove or disprove anything.
Well, we might have lost some supporters, which brings me to this point. I think it's a pretty important one that people said, yeah, the fans should be the gauge of whether this works or not. And I agree with that. I mean, the fans are a crucial element of this. But the fact is that probably none of the rule changes we've seen would have come in if the fans were
part
first.
You can't govern, by popular percentage vote.
I'm saying people initially have a bit of a knee-jerk response, and then once they see it, they might soften. But it's like every referendum we've ever had in Australia gets rejected because there's an instinctive sort of no change sort of mentality. So how do we take the supporters' views into account and yet not risk alienating them, like you're saying, if the supporters hate something?
I don't know too many supporters that on the back of one change in one season would completely disappear from the game. I think the AFL made a fantastic move during the week. On Monday, Mark Evans came out and said, we made a mistake.
Mm. Now, we were wrong.
That is a huge step forward in the AFL industry. And I'm not just talking about the AFL administration. I mean right across the industry.
The media, Chris.
If we got it wrong in 1 year, given that the rule will be the same for every single team, and we said it didn't work, we're going back to where we were, how much would we have lost?
Two statements ago, you said trial it in season. Would you call, is round 16 too late? Would you call on the AFL now to actually make a round, a decision this season? On a complete round of matches to have a massage.
That'd be a big call.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I was hearing.
Yeah, no, sorry, to clarify, it has to be across the course of a season. And even more than that, I would say you would need to bring it in, say, in October, certainly pre-Christmas, to give time for clubs to adjust and train it all. Then I think it's an even playing field.
If the game does get spread more, is it going to have an effect on recruiting if the stoppages get thinned and obviously the aerobic requirements?
Bloody oath.
And well, because the midfielders have become bigger bodied and in the which is natural enough for the way the game's now played, so it would change some things, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it would, and that's the part that would require some thought from the clubs, and this is why I'm in favour of a longer trial period, because across a few weeks, you don't really know.
Mm.
And it may be that the game is much harder, or for the key forwards, it might be much easier. They might just be able to stay at home, and the Tom Hawkins type might come into their
good
own.
Good old days, Scotty.
Yeah, Moons might make a come.
Beautiful. Just to back you up there, Chris, we have had rule changes being rescinded. And people forget this one, but in 1988-89, when you were awarded a free kick, you had to kick. You couldn't handball it. And after 2 years, I decided it wasn't working, and we went back to how it was. Now, you tell that to the kids today, and they don't believe you, but it happened.
Yeah.
If they don't go back on their rules, that's been the problem.
Thanks, Grandpa.
One other suggestion that I did hear, we're heading to a break now, but was the distance of a handball. And I don't think this could possibly work, but it's just been interesting to hear different people come up with theories. This theory is if you made the illegal handball have to be 2 metres, then players would not be able to do that little rushed handball out of a stoppage, and you'd have
What do they do? Like, give it to just
exactly.
Just let it go.
I think it's not practical, but it's interesting.
What we all used to do is say, oh, that's ridiculous. forget about that. That's a joke. What we should be doing is thinking about all the reasons why that might be a good idea. Mm. You still might chuck it out, but let's be a bit more open-minded.
You'd have to fumble it while running backwards.
Kicking backwards in the defensive 50, that's another one. And we've trialled that. I don't mind that.
Oh, you're just throwing up crazy stuff now, Rowan.
That's not crazy.
Well, we've solved football in that time. Everything's going to be right. I think the one thing that the AFL have done, well, the competition has done over 15 or 20 years, why I think the game's not as good to watch, but it hasn't had massive effects on crowds, is the competition is still really strong. Mm. I mean, the way the rivalry between clubs and obviously the media coverage and all that, and kids coming through still love it, but the game itself...
The bottom sides have a greater chance of upsetting the top sides on any given day, other than you go back to the early 90s, which we seem to hold up as the greatest era. And you did have, you know, like Sydney, say, 93. You knew you were going to beat them. There were guaranteed wins every week. Anyone who tips now will tell you that never happens.
You've got a good point, Hutto, as you go to the break, though. But populations are bigger now.
Exactly.
And marketing is a lot stronger.
Yep.
The sell to the masses is a lot better.
Yep.
Doesn't mean the product is
exactly
better.
Exactly right. And and further into the future, that other sports are bigger and more powerful.
Exactly.
And we know they're a real threat. So, anyway, it's... 14-7. We'll talk about the Cats next. We'll give you the Sunday changes as well. No change for either North Melbourne or Essendon. Gibson and Langford are the Subway subs. Chris Scott, our guest, in the coach's box for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara here now. Test drive at your Nissan dealer today. And Odyssey Financial. Achieve the future you deserve.
I haven't been playing that good of footy. It's probably a good time for me to just sit back and review the first half of the season. And when evaluating my game, it's probably having too much care for the side in ways. It sounds selfish in saying that it is about Joel Selwood, but when you play your best footy, you're in your own mind. You're just attacking, you're getting after it.
Joel Selwood there talking in the third person about his struggles and frustrations.
We'll speak... we rolled out of Geelong, Hutto.
Danger signs, Chris.
Did Cameron Mooney used to talk about Cameron Mooney?
Danger signs. Now, come on, Chris. There are real danger signs when a guy starts doing that.
Even the champions say things that they would later regret.
In a moment, we'll talk about the Cats. But in the ad break, as always happens when we have these discussions, we kept talking about the rules and so forth.
I thought you were going to talk about something else.
Oh, God. No, we just expect that.
No.
Chris, what made him lose his train of thought?
The length of the games. The length of the games, Chris. Do you think the game... Because Mark Evans made this point during the week about trying to reduce the time, and we know that they changed the way time on is called. They actually took quarters back to 20 minutes and then made the whistle blow at every stoppage. But that's actually lengthened quarters because we've now got more stoppages. Do you think that's an issue?
I do. And trying to remove myself from coaching and winning and losing each week and looking at it purely in terms of the spectators and who we want to be watching the game in 20 years. And we've got to make it attractive for the kids. I've heard the view recently that the game should be much shorter. Not at the margin, not 10 minutes here, 8 minutes there, much shorter. Instead of 115, 120 minutes, 80 minutes. Two halves, very short half time. Make it snappy, make it punchy for the people watching at home. And if 10-year-old kids go to the footy on a Friday night, they're getting home in a decent hour and encourage the parents to bring them along. Now, I know that's radical, but as we discussed before, I think we should explore all the reasons why it would work before we dismiss it out of hand. I know there are short-term issues with the broadcasters, there are revenue issues, there's a whole range of things that would need to be considered.
What about the historical distortion of the actual way that the sport's been played then?
That would be significant. Now, I don't want to offend anyone at home that values the historical parts of our game, but I think the future of the game is more important than
keeping
in well, same as cricket.
What are you
Test
talking
cricket,
about distortion?
Came in one day, and now it's a 2020, everything gone shorter.
Yeah, what do you mean distortion, though, Dan?
People put it this way,
if you've got 80 minutes of true playing time, and you've got Lance Franklin kicks 120 goals for the year, 22 by 80 minutes, and suddenly he's got 22 games by...
They don't kick as many goals anyway anymore, do they?
I know they don't, but the
cricket one, Moons, they used to have timeless tests. You know, England had to go back on, had to catch its boat, so they gave one away after 10 days in South Africa.
Only you would remember that.
If you want to continue on with a silly argument, I mean, Tony Lockett and Jason Dunstall and even Dern didn't have to deal with modern-day defence.
Yeah.
Buddy Franklin's not one out too often these days.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the good of the game far outweighs any of those considerations. And there might be a trade-off as well. It might not be that the games are shorter and we have the same number of games. Maybe we can actually get more footy because the players will recover quicker. We could have a longer season. The draw would be...
Everyone could play each other twice.
Fairer.
Which would make up the revenue. You just solved all our issues in one. Coming around on this,
and
Chris,
just to give you some accuracy with the historical nature, Pig never had a second player drop back. The centre-half forward had to deal with the resting ruckman coming back. So we always had two, but not the full four.
I remember, Derm.
7 minutes to seven. Let's talk Geelong. Let's start with the captain because we heard his words there. On a couple of fronts. One is what happened last week. Your comments after the game, I think you and Brad copped a little bit of criticism for seeming to have synchronised views on the, I'm not sure if you caught that, but a couple of people thought that you and Brad were sort of looking after each other and your teams with the comments.
I haven't heard that. I actually do follow most of the footy, but I hadn't heard that. I can guarantee you, from the moment the final siren went, to me getting the press conference, whatever it was, 20 minutes later, I didn't speak to my brother. We tend to have similar views on the game, disagree on some pretty key points.
It usually happens when you're a twin, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we spent a bit of time together across the journey. But the one thing that I would say, when we had time to sit down and reflect and consider all of the issues as they related to Joel's incident, I think the footy club made a pretty responsible decision to the game. So if there's a little bit of criticism for my post-match comments after seeing the incident very, very briefly as it happened and then moving on quickly, I can cop that.
And I think you actually got some praise for actually not pretending that you hadn't seen it. So
yeah, well, I mean, we have the vision in the box, but I think most coaches will tell you, you see things, but there's so much to do. You don't dwell on it. We certainly didn't look at it over and over again and make a reasoned assessment.
Just to clarify that, when you say football club decision, you're talking about the decision not to appeal.
Because we could have mounted an argument to say the wording of the charge was defendable.
Yeah, okay.
Was this maybe the week that Searle probably needed? Because he's been a little bit angry this year. Frustrated. He's been throwing his fists and elbows and legs and arms going a bit everywhere. It's been a tough year for him.
Playing like you, mate.
Yeah, look, if he didn't explicitly say it in that grab earlier, he certainly alluded to it, that I don't subscribe to the view that this will be a good thing for our club. We'd love to have him out there tomorrow. But given that he is going to miss, there are some positives to draw. He's on record as saying that, yeah, he's been a little bit frustrated because the team isn't going as well as it has in previous years. Now, you don't need to be Einstein to sit back and have a look at Joel Selwood's record in terms of his win-loss especially, not just his individual accolades, and realise that this year's been a little bit different for him and therefore probably is a little bit more frustrating.
Is he struggling with it? Because taggers are not used every week in every team, but it seems like they are against him. Is he battling knowing that he's copping that intense tag every week?
In my time at Geelong, he's had it a lot, most weeks. I think the difference is he's not quite playing as well. So the inference is made the taggers are doing a better job. I suspect it's a little bit of both. They're doing a good job. He's not playing quite as well. And look, we're realists. We understand that our next best midfielder is a fair way behind Joel at this point in our development. We don't think that'll be the case for too much longer.
The Gold Coast game, round three, it was close to the best game I've seen him play, the one where you guys just got over the line.
Yeah.
I wrote it, you know, not sort of
yes,
patting myself
are.
On
yes,
the sort of. I wrote a thing a few days after that talking about how he had to get some help or he would be worn down and it would really start to take a toll. And I feel like that's pretty much how it's played out. Have you been disappointed at the, I won't say failure, but that someone else hasn't emerged to a level to take enough of that heat off him? I know you've lost Mitch Duncan, and that's been a big one.
Yeah, we probably thought on balance Mitch Duncan had been our best player up until the point of his injury. Look, I think it's more a function of Joel's performance as an individual rather than him feeling the pressure anymore. I think the Joel put a fair bit of pressure on his performance last year and played really well. So we assume, well, he's going fine. There aren't any problems. It hasn't been all that hard to foresee that there would come a point in Geelong's development where we were going to have a little bit of a gap in those players who are in the prime of their career. So we think that Harry Taylor, Joel Selwood, Tom Hawkins are in that age bracket where they can justifiably say, I should be playing the best footy of my career. There aren't too many others. So, yeah, we would love Mitch Duncan and Mark Blitzarves and Josh Caddy, Cameron Guthrie, to be close to Joel's level now. The reality is they're not, but we're pretty impatient and we're relatively confident they can get there quickly.
Well, saying that then, Scotty, where do you think your team is at come the end of the year, and is this now a time for you guys to keep bringing more players in because you think you're at the level of, you know, if we bring a couple of really good players in, we can compete again? Or do we need to keep stocking up our young guys and go that way?
Well, this goes to the conversation we had earlier. We are not going to sacrifice our future in the hope that a few players can make the difference. So if by bringing in a couple of players we compromise our long-term future, we won't do it. But again, the key point, especially for the Geelong supporters to understand, is the days of making the choice between short-term success and sacrificing your future are kind of gone. You can do that more, do those two things together, develop for the future and improve your team short-term better than you've ever been able to do it.
Do you feel like in retrospect, and it probably sounds silly in a way, I mean, you guys finished equal top of the ladder on points last year, lost both your finals. Now, it's easy to be wise in hindsight, but you look back on it now and it looks like it was almost a bit of a misleading guide as to where you blokes were in a long-term sense, because if you looked just at the black and white facts, you'd say, well, we finished equal top. Why shouldn't we be pushing for a premiership? But you're clearly not pushing for a premiership 12 months down the track.
It's always hard to gauge. Like, even in retrospect, we're struggling with that one a little bit. I think it's a little unfair to say that, you know, we finish equal on top in points, that it was misleading. I think that performance was well earned.
Yeah. But I don't mean it wasn't well earned, but
I take your point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think this idea is a little simplistic, that you finish in a certain spot, the expectation is there externally, you've got to make a call to either seize the moment and win one in the next year or two, or you completely ruin the rest of...
Well, your brother's probably got a handle on that too, hasn't he?
Yeah, we talked about it earlier, and as I said, then I'm not here to talk, and certainly not here to defend North Melbourne, but one bad year, unless you've traded away all your picks and destroyed your salary cap, is not as big a problem as it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, okay, why is that?
So we talked about it a little bit.
So if you had been here, Rowan...
we did talk about it earlier, but the discussion. Yeah, I mean, in summary,
you,
10 years ago you had a choice. You either trade in players and give up your draft picks, or you forego good season players and you just develop slowly through the draft. Now you can keep your draft picks and bring in season players at the same time, because free agency means you don't have to trade, necessarily.
One last one. Are you getting closer at the time of the year to have to be making decisions on the experienced players to give them notice and all that sort of stuff, or will you just leave it till the end of the year?
No, it's a case-by-case basis. So we've spoken publicly a fair bit about our priorities around being honest and being respectful of our champion players. So the detail around that for individuals are slightly different. But as long as we can satisfy those two criteria, I guess the overarching philosophy is to do the right thing by the club. But, yeah, there are a number of discussions that are being had. And even over the last couple of years, I've been proud of the way our clubs handle it. But
is this going to be tougher?
It's hard to say. Every individual is a little bit different. But the last couple of years, I think the club's handled it well, but it hasn't been perfect. Yeah, there are things that, with the benefit of hindsight, you might change. Coaches will always say they should spend more time with their players. They should communicate more, and especially with players who are towards the end of their career. I think it's a mistake, and I'm learning this on the job, it's a mistake to assume as a coach that the player's feeling either comfortable or uncomfortable in his position, and you can't communicate too much. The risk of talking about it a lot is that sometimes you get held to things that you can't necessarily deliver on.
Like what?
Well, sometimes when you're talking a lot, you get drawn into conversations that are predicting the future.
About contracts?
Oh, about a whole range of things. Where you're going to play, what we'd like to do with you. In the pre-season, Moons would understand this well. We talk to players And it's not just the head coach and the star player or the experienced player, but it's a range of coaches and the inexperienced players. We want to play this way. We see you moving into the midfield. We'd like you to do a little bit more of this. And four games into the season,
where's my time in the midfield?
Yeah, and it's kind of like, well, maybe I just shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's interesting. That's great insight, as always, Chris. We appreciate your time. You've changed the game. You've got rid of half the length of it. So tonight's match will be two halves of 40 minutes, everybody.
And we're going to round 36 next year.
Yeah, strap yourselves in.
And we'll be going off air at about 9:30, so we're all for it. Chris, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Scotty.
Again, good luck tomorrow against the Bulldogs. Chris Scott, our guest in the coach's box for the all-new Nissan NP300 Navara. Here now, test drive at your Nissan dealer today. And Odyssey Financial, achieve the future you deserve. Joe Watson and Lachie Hansen coming up as we get into Friday night footy. We'll give you all the changes for Sunday as well.